Hey now everybody, welcome to a special episode of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson, sitting over to Jason Rugard. He will tell you what we're talking about.
All right, we got the Entourage episode guide, episode 3 tonight. We'll be talking about the show titled Talk Show. So,
hey,
at Trevor's command, you can start your episode and play along with us or listen along with us. Or you can just listen to us bullshit about what's going on screen. Either way, Trevor?
1, 2, 3, play.
All right, this episode premiered August 1st, 2004. It is titled Talk Show. It went from 1.94 million viewers up from 1.8 million the previous week. So the high for the season was 2 million viewers, and this episode is getting to the high mark for the season, gaining in popularity. I think it's one of the better episodes of the season.
Oh, for sure. I mean, this has the classic drama line, right? Get ready for some lies. Isn't that, get ready for some fucking lies, isn't that this episode?
I can't recall if that's this episode or not. Now, I looked at this beforehand to do some research, and I didn't hear that line in it, but I was...
No.
I was busy taking in a lot of other stuff. There are some classic lines in this. This is the first episode written by Larry Charles, Seinfeld fame. Mm-hmm. He's executive producer on this show, but...
Mad About You, Sacha Baron Cohen movies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Long... distinguished history with television comedies, and his touch is evident, I think, in this episode, because there's a lot of things that are set up that are paid off in future episodes, but there's a lot of immediate payoffs in this episode as well. Starts off with a boxing match between Klitschko and Corey Sanders. This is a real boxing event. I'm a boxing fanatic, and I love that they have this in here. It was the first time they melded any sort of HBO stuff with the boys, you know, HBO using it to their advantage with an event that they had.
Yeah, of course. I mean, obviously, this is free production value, right?
And advertising their own in-house, all this kind of stuff. Real fight here. Klitschko did defend his brother's title and or got his title back for his brother because he got beat by Sanders in the rematch. But that's a real-life thing, and this is a show. And they spent a lot of time on this, actually. They're in for like a good minute of the episode here. And on a short show.
Yeah, well, they're definitely setting the we're rich, here we are, very close to the ring, right, type of thing. But sporting events, as you say, this is a little different than you typically see because this is boxing. Typically, you'd see basketball since it's indoors.
A lot of baseball.
I think that's easy to shoot. Yeah, baseball and football, I think those you don't see as much as basketball, but... you almost never see boxing, but this is HBO, so.
HBO already had their cameras in the arena, so it's probably easy for them to maneuver around and get the shots they needed for this episode. They probably had carte blanche to do what they wanted to do in a lot of respects. All right, here. So we got, I love that there's something coming up here, is when Ari tells the boys, if you see Rob Schneider, tell him you bought those tickets, because he clearly is already giving them to his rising star and away from a guy who's probably a falling star there.
Exactly. Oh, for sure. Around this time, yeah.
This is the famous Kimmel episode. And Jimmy Kimmel must be a good sport, because this show wasn't famous when he agreed to come on and do this. So what could the payoff have been? Because he's not portrayed in the greatest light for the majority of this episode.
I don't know. I mean, he's definitely, he is one of the lesser big talk shows, right?
He's actually my favorite.
I mean, that would be why I think that he would be doing this and not... You don't get the Tonight Show, you don't get David Letterman, you get Jimmy Kimmel, right? You know what I mean? Just availability, probably. You know, I'm sure he's willing to do stuff like this.
Especially in 2004, when this was coming out, because it wasn't that far removed from The Man Show.
Exactly.
And things like that. It kind of fit the demographic, and I think awareness with our age group at the time was with Kimmel and not with Leno and Letterman. And although I think you're a Conan O'Brien guy, if I recall.
Yeah, well, Craig Ferguson, really, if
yes.
You want to go with it. But yeah, I mean, I watched Conan from the beginning, and Letterman and Leno as well. I mean, I watched that stuff long before Kimmel came on the scene. So, but here he is.
Well, subversive humor, I'd say Ferguson was the master of that. Post Carson.
Yeah, I loved Craig Ferguson.
So do I. This is a great line here. When they offer Kimmel a drink, I don't drink. No, I do drink. And he takes a shot. I love that line. It's just great line.
He's just a fun guy. I mean, he's just a natural entertainer, really. And it's a guy that can talk, which is perfect for a talk show host, right?
And a guy who's comfortable in his own skin. Doesn't seem like he wants to be the movie star he's interviewing.
I forgot Luke Wilson was in this.
This is a great episode. This is a great scene because
this is the one where the Rufus, yeah, where he teaches them how to get the cool home theater system.
This episode actually sets up some secondary characters that we will see throughout the episode throughout the season. One is Rufus, the other is Kristen, Shauna, the personal publicist.
Yeah, she's throughout the whole show, isn't she?
Right, but those are characters we hadn't been introduced to yet, and this episode is setting up those things.
Episode.
Yeah. Left side of the screen, if you're watching, the guy with the beard is Larry Charles in a cameo there. Looks kind of like Rick Rubin.
Who knows the fuck he's doing in this group, but I guess he's Luke Wilson's friend.
And I love that drama takes the opportunity to make everything awkward by taking a shot at trying to get in Luke Wilson's next movie, which the role is already taken by Owen Wilson.
That's how desperate drama is, right?
Every opportunity is an opportunity for drama, and he makes everything so fucking awkward.
Yeah. Well, especially with someone like Luke Wilson, he thinks that he must in some way think that he's almost at that Luke Wilson tier, right?
Yeah, or at least the Owen Wilson one. He wants him to cut his brother out of the movie. Well, if he can't do it, you know, he's costly. So we also are getting the Kimmel drama. A little alluding to that, you know, that Kimmel and Johnny Drama have a little drama. Mm-hmm. And in this sequence, when Drama makes the terrible breakfast for these boys. I love that he decided that he was their personal chef. And that was
basically like their trainer in a way, right? Because he's always constantly trying to get them to eat kind of better and whatnot, isn't he? And that's kind of what he's doing here, right?
He's a fitness fanatic, even though he's not particularly in the greatest shape.
Yeah, this is definitely the one with that quote. I think that's one of the funniest quotes in this whole show.
He wants him to cancel on Kimmel at this point. Drama is begging Vince to cancel Kimmel on Drama. He says he got kicked off Mel. I love with these parts, these morsels of Drama's backstory and how far he fell come out.
The same thing. I love that they have this drama character to be able to fold in all these other extra like weird characters into the show. You know, like here he is, and he, you know, was friends with Jimmy Kimmel. Like it just makes sense, right?
And they have bad blood because Drama was riding high, and in a way, it's Vince's what Vince never wants to be: a television star, a quasi television star that had a hard fall and is now obscure. This story tonight is mostly about Drama, because the central joke is mostly, this is really a secondary episode in a lot of ways. I mean, Eric has a lot going on in this episode, because now we're talking about Kristen, another character they introduce, Eric's ex-girlfriend, who's a pain in the ass and written like a pain in the ass.
Oh, that's right. She's crazy.
She's just very controlling and
literally crazy.
Right.
Right. Not as crazy as some of the other ones.
Well, there's one
that he dates later on, but yeah.
They set up Emily from Ari's office in the last episode as kind of like a quasi love interest. But now we're seeing that Eric has some lingering stuff going on from the last one. And that
isn't this a running joke throughout? I mean, eventually he actually does get back together with her, right? With this is his ex, right? It's kind of like a running joke for a while.
Yeah.
He's constantly having issues with her.
Exactly. Because she's manipulating him. And Eric says something very interesting about all characters here. He tells Turtle, you've never had a relationship. Vince, you've never ended one. In Drama, you only love yourself. And it's true. That's like Vince has never broken up with anybody. We come to find that out, which will pay off later. And it's a scene that sets up all of their love lives. But Eric has the most fucked up love life right now.
And here's Shauna,
who's played fucking brilliantly.
I love Debbie her. Mazur. She takes no shit.
Perfect New York in L.A. I mean, she's got that attitude, can control these boys. They're kind of attracted to her in a way, too, but she's more motherly, but doesn't have time for them. It's great casting, great writing. Another well-done element. I'm glad they bring her back throughout the season.
Yeah, you can see why she sticks around.
She's Ari in a sense, but she's Ari in a different world.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But they don't, they let the Vince thing go a little too, he's a little too loose with this, you know, not being prepared.
Isn't he constantly like that? He doesn't really give a shit, right? Until he gets on, really gets on the show, right? Even then, this is when they try to get him to wear that hat, don't they?
Yes.
That Rufus hat. Is that what it is?
But they're trying to get a, they're trying to get a home theater system that Luke Wilson turned them on to.
But they're trying to get a deal, right?
Yeah, and if they give him a plug on the episode, then they get knocked off. They got to pay for installation or something like that.
I don't think that's happened yet, huh? I'm ahead of the episode here.
Yeah, but you got a great recall at this point. I don't think you've seen these episodes probably for at least a decade, right?
Yeah.
And they hold up surprisingly well. I mean, I'm watching this, and I like that they stuck with Head On. The movie. I like that they didn't just dump that after the first episode. It's the premiere, it's the review, and now the talk show. It's all leading up to the movie coming out in theaters. It's very interesting how they did that. I'm glad it wasn't just a gimmick. I think this golf scene is the best scene, the best sequence of the episode. Every character is totally clearly drawn here and true to who they are. You know, drama's trying to get something out of it, trying to get on the show a little bit, trying to get something going on. Eric's covering for Vince because Vince can't be bothered. And meanwhile, Turtle's fucking around and will come into the scene in a very haphazard way. They would be tough trying to do these pre... You know, these talk show things. You ever do a talk show taping? You ever been to one of these things?
Oh, yeah. I went to the Conan Tonight Show.
So you know that they do the pre-interview, where they basically talk about what they're going to do, and then they come out.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen Larry Sanders.
Right, and rehash it out. I don't know if a lot of people have ever seen one, though, and it's a bit of acting, really, by both parties to make it to have it come off as well as it does. And they got the show hyper and all that kind of stuff.
Right, well, unless you're Craig Ferguson, then the pre-interview is the show.
Yeah, that's true. That's why he's so loose and the best. And Vince, you know, the subtext here is that Vince is getting high all day, could care less about this interview he's got to be on tonight, or looking sober for it.
And this is something he does, though, to Eric a lot, right? Makes Eric do all the chores, so to speak, while he gets to run around and play, right?
Yeah, Eric's the stressor. He doesn't, you know, they're all representing a part of the ego of Vince in a way. You know, you got the one who is gluttonous.
Are you going to say they're all in his mind? They don't really exist.
It's not Herman's Head. Remember that show? No, but Eric's the worrywart. Drama's the failure that he could be. And you know, even the gluttonous one, the one who's just going to enjoy everything. And so Vince is a little bit of each of them in a way. I don't know. I've always liked how they all complimented each other, though, because they don't have the same insecurities.
Well, they do. I mean, Eric and Vince both do wind up, you know, becoming equals at the end of the series, especially when they start producing and directing, or I guess not directing, but producing that their movie, right? Here's the crazy ex-girlfriend.
She looks like Brittany Murphy, too. This actress.
She does, yeah.
Was cast because I think that she looked like Brittany Murphy. I love that she starts it off by saying, "I'm in the best shape of my life. You look like shit. Who cut your hair?" It's such a dig, you know, And you can tell the way that Eric's being played here and written that he's still interested curious because this is his first LA girlfriend and has to explain himself that playing golf and shopping is part of his job.
Well, it's definitely something that is easy to play off to have that girl from perspective where you don't do anything all day. You know, what do you actually do? He does nothing.
Right, but he obviously is doing stuff all day. I mean, he's not... but he is smoking weed. He is hanging out.
What did he do? Yeah, what have we seen him do so far? You know,
yeah, to somebody who is maybe your spouse or your significant other or whatever it may be, that probably isn't very becoming. That you've been hanging out with a movie star all day. But he's also the one with the girlfriend, and you can see they're giving him shit about it, and they don't want. He's breaking some sort of not code, but he's breaking the fun.
I was just
going
to say the guy code. In a way, he kind of is. He's breaking up the group in a way, right?
He's the one that's got responsibilities. Like right now, he can't answer the phone, but he's got to do this shit. And he's the only one with responsibility. He's the only one that takes the responsibility, and half of that is because he's got the girlfriend here. And this is great because this is leads to the makeup sex versus breakup sex. Is there a difference? Is it the same thing? These are the kind of questions the show
raised.
Well, it has
to be a difference.
Well, this episode argued that it was one and the same, and I mean, it makes it clear here. This is they're breaking up, and we know how that plays out.
Not well.
This is the infamous meeting of Rufus, who will go on to be not only a secondary character, his daughter becomes involved later seasons.
That's
as a
true.
Love interest for Turtle. So
I forgot about that.
Remember that?
With the whole sneakers and all that stuff.
Yep.
This is funny because my uncle, recently retired, used to do what Rufus does.
Home theater installer.
It's interesting enough. Oh, yeah. I've been to Spielberg's house where he was installing the theater, and he's done, I think, a lot of huge... big name, you know, in-home real theaters, though. Not like this. Like, this is a tiny little theater. Like, Spielberg had an actual, like, a huge room. Like, it was an enormous theater.
I would imagine Spielberg's home theater would be a little bit more than the 190,000 that Rufus is quoting them.
But that's the level of celebrity that my uncle was. You know, Zemeckis, right. All those guys, he installed a lot of their, if you call them home theaters, you know, literally theaters in their home.
Yeah, I mean, that's... probably looks better than most of their theatrical exhibitions that they see. So Eric did it. They had sex. Now he's kind of stuck because he has feelings again. And you can tell just from the way that they're laying here, it's almost like he's in, I hate to say that, the female position, but in movies, usually you see that's the girl's kind of like that, gazing at the guy, and he's not wanting her to go.
He gets left in bed. He's like, oh. He kind of has the just fucked hair.
Yeah.
The JBF hair.
He's a little frumpy about
it. He's the girl.
and really,
they got pinball machines.
He's also the last one to the party, which everybody else is ready to go. He's coming in. It just, to me, that looks like he's separated from the group a little bit.
Of course he is. His mind's elsewhere. Their mind is all, he walks in on them talking about, you know, the availability of... they got a stock like a fish pond or whatever, you know, they're about to go get some, you know, that's what they're thinking about. He's thinking of wrestling with, is he going to be able to get back with his girlfriend or not?
And then he says the drama, you have sex, you break up sex is when you have sex and you leave. And he just told him that's the only kind of sex I have.
Yeah.
And this whole thing about Vince's one night stand or whatever it was, shortened affair with Sarah Foster. I forgot Sarah Foster was an actress. Do you remember Sarah Foster?
Yeah.
She was in The Big Bounce, which they reference right here.
Yeah, she was.
I totally forgot that she was in anything. The Big Bounce was a terrible movie that actually starred Owen Wilson, Luke Wilson's brother. Know. This episode, I guess, is setting up that...
Tell Kimmel I'm here. It's like no one gives a shit drama.
I wonder if these were the same sets, the same stages that they used for the Larry Sanders, or if this is all HBO behind-the-scenes stuff right here. And you wonder how much of their own stuff they're using to cut costs this first season, all sorts of things.
Well, this has to be Jimmy Kimmel stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they probably actually shot there because they would have plenty of time to use that studio, since Jimmy Kimmel's show would only shoot for like a couple hours right in the afternoon.
If Jimmy Kimmel's green room is stocked like that,
I mean, I always wondered, but
who's
you know
hanging
it's not
out there.
You know it's not true because they show, especially on, is it Jimmy Kimmel? I think no, on Corden, they show his back rooms there. He has all separate rooms for separate guests. I can't imagine the green rooms are actually
hangout spots.
That insane. Everyone that goes on those shows, it seems like they show up just barely to get on the show, and then they bounce immediately. Like, why would you want to hang out there?
Maybe in the 70s it was like that. Maybe that's like an old, like when Burt Reynolds was going on The Tonight Show and things like that. There's probably groupies hanging out backstage.
Maybe.
You know, here's the infamous exchange between Sarah Foster and Vince. Who dumped who? Who didn't call who? No feelings were hurt.
And as it turns out, she's just as bad as Vince.
Right. So who's...
she could give a shit less.
They're both narcissistic and... Which is a nice twist on this.
Well, she really outdoes him on it because he expects her to kind of I don't know, I guess be hurt in some way, and she just does not care.
Not only does she not care, she takes control of the situation. It is a nice twist.
He's kind of her bitch, really.
Drama confessing that he's going to stay married forever when he gets married.
Is that any different than maybe I'm going a little too deep here, but, you know, Eric just had that similar situation, right, where he was the girl's bitch. Now, here we have
Yeah, that is a subtext Vince in this episode. Doing it.
That's interesting,
yeah.
Right?
The macho guy
two
is actually...
Two completely separate viewpoints, yet both of them become the submissives, right, in those relationships.
And setting up here, Eric and Emily in the Eric-Emily-Kristen love triangle that will dominate the rest of the first season. And really, Eric's character, if there's a weakness to the Eric character, it's the constant... Is he with them? Is he not with them?
It's the pining and shit, isn't it, really? I mean, just the... Because he always gets so down, just like butthurt over the whole thing with... Really with any girl that he's dating. It's just constant.
Yeah, he's overly... His character is written overly emotional and in flux constantly with Sloane later seasons and Emily and Kristen and these two. And I do like that they stepped outside to have a cigarette here because it is a nice juxtaposition to the fact that Kristen would never allow the cigarette, you feel like. You know what I mean? She's too, you know, preppy or clean.
And they're
cut
actually
or
sharing it, you know.
And they seem that they're actually enjoying each other's company and conversation. And granted, it's the shiny new toy scenario, too, because they're getting to know each other. They're not in a relationship.
Sure.
But it's a cute scene in a it's kind of a sweet scene, actually, in the whole episode. Sweetest scene. And they're getting to know each other slowly. And you just saw Vince... You know, having sex casually. It shows their personality
types.
It's
weird. I mean, is it, again, is this tied in? Here they're talking about addiction, right? They're unable to quit something. Isn't that Eric's problem with his ex-girlfriend? Isn't this, what did Vince just went and seeked out, right? Sarah Foster for the same thing. Am I looking too hard into this?
No, you're going good,
because
man.
That's just slap. Seems like it's slapping me in the face that that's actually a...
Yeah, you're going hard on it.
Subtext there.
Yeah, as you said, I'm seeing what you're talking about here. And Ari has been largely missing from this episode. But nice moment here.
I do like this.
I love this.
As always.
Where he basically, she thinks that he's hitting on her and he's really trying to...
Yeah, I'm trying to sign you. I'm not trying to fuck you. But that's how he... It's exactly how he is with everyone.
That's Ari in a nutshell right there. You don't know if he's trying to fuck you or sign you. He may be trying to do both. He's banned. Yeah. So he and Drama both have some issues with Kimmel. Yeah, Ari gets one scene and kills it in the episode, making him a memorable side character once again. But a side character that grew so popular, he almost threatened to take over the show in later seasons.
Oh, yeah.
For better or worse, too. And that's why they had to bring in the wife, the daughter. I mean, that's when we saw more and more of those characters because he was written so...
Oh, sure. Oh, the whole... I mean, his entire company, right?
Yeah, Lloyd.
I mean, there's a whole... I mean, that's a whole show into of itself. Well, you have the new owner come, you know, his new partner come in.
Oh, I forgot about all that stuff. We got a lot of stuff ahead of us.
His old partner. Remember his old partner that came back and started having affairs and stuff?
That's
and all
right.
That stuff. Yeah, there's a whole nother show there.
My God, I forgot we have all that in front of us. Now, Vince and Sarah on TV admitting that they just hooked up. Now, this would never happen. No publicist would ever allow these two stars to do that because you would have TMZ. Granted, this is a pre-TMZ world.
No,
but
she's
still have paparazzi.
She's very unhappy about this. We missed the line, too, but Johnny Drama did say, get ready for some fucking lies. Ready to hear some fucking lies. I think I'm pretty sure. Oh no! Here.
Yeah,
it is.
Right here we have it.
It comes up.
We didn't miss it. No, we didn't.
Because he tells him about his brother.
He doesn't want to show the clip of his movie, which is another publicist no-no.
Yeah, she gets pissed about that too.
But he brings out Johnny Drama, which is repeated in the movie. If you haven't seen the Entourage movie, I doubt you'd be listening to this if you haven't seen the Entourage movie. But in the Entourage movie, Drama is taken on stage and given a Best Supporting Actor Oscar, and he gets his moment. But this is the closest he gets to that beforehand. And Vince enables this all.
Sure, there's fucking lies. I love that shit.
And all Turtle wants is for Vince to plug Rufus's home theater so they get a discount.
Of course, yeah. And a lot of these episodes wind up like this, right? With these guys all kind of somehow torn apart in these different directions, all wanting these different things, all having these different issues. And then at the end of the episode, they all kind of come back together.
They're all in the same room, typically, and things are okay again in La La Land down there. Of course he's backstage. Drama would be nowhere more than 10 feet from Vince. They do a good job writing drama always because he never comes off as the mooch that you know he is. You know, because he's not mean-spirited. He's not vindictive. He's not trying to steal Vince's money. He just wants to be around it still. He's addicted to being around it.
He just wants that shot, you know? He still wants just a shot. And it doesn't even have to be a big one. That's what I like about him. He kind of knows what level he's at in a way, even though he would never admit it, but kind of does as much.
And Kevin Dillon is just so plays this so well. Kind of looks like a Ethan Hawke a little bit in the face there. And being the younger brother of Matt Dillon, I'm sure we reached upon that in other episodes. That's got to inform his. It's got to inform his performance a little bit.
Oh, for sure.
And then they're all at home. Everyone's together. They're smoking a joint,
relaxing,
watching it on
drinking
television
the Rolling
later.
Rock because they're rich. Why are they drinking Rolling Rock?
That was probably an early sponsor, right?
Was
I mean, look at that cool flat screen TV they have in 2004. What's that, about a 35 inch?
Yeah. They're all rich, but they're still drinking Rolling Rock. All right. Oh, here he goes.
You know they would cut this out. I mean, at the taping, he could do this, but they would have cut this out of the airing.
I don't know.
I mean, the hat they couldn't cut out, I doubt, but. Yeah, Kimmel then gets the hats, and then you got the double. And Drama facilitated it, right? So Turtle and Drama do their thing. They all get their way. And then the line, great night. I love it when they all say it.
It's just like this show. At some point, they're putting in all this work on this this house. But they're going to leave fairly soon.
Always.
Don't they seem to always do that, right? Put in a lot of work on their expensive houses to begin with, and then they just ditch them.
Well, that wrapped up that episode. What did you think looking back on it? Do you still think it's one of the stronger of the first season? I think it's the best of the three that we've watched so far, and that's no disrespect to writer, showrunner Doug Ellen. I just thought that one flowed so much better than the previous two. The characters, we already know who they are, and we're getting a feel of what we can expect in the remaining five episodes this season.
I mean, I agree. We're getting a much better feeling of the world at this point. And it's not, I mean, still in this episode, you're still being served up like this person's this, but they're still defining everything. But you get, it's a lot smoother of a definition. And I don't think until you hit, you know, episode five, which is the Val Kilmer Sherpa episode. That episode is just smooth from beginning to end. And it's just, and it's really a nothing episode, but it just lives in the world. You know, it doesn't have to sit here and kind of define stuff anymore.
Yeah. And it doesn't feel forced. The first episodes, the first one especially felt a little forced.
Well, there's
in
information, as you say, like, there's so much setup going on here. You're right. I mean, especially in these first few episodes, and the payoffs aren't going to come until later on. Not that these are incredibly long seasons or anything, you know, so we're that's why I say we're about to hit the mid section of this. So we're going to start seeing some payoffs here. But yeah, it is a lot of just set up and like this character is like this and this character is like that until finally they can just be that.
Which they get to be, I think, in the second season, they really hit their stride. Mm-hmm. This first season, the world building is still going on. And even, I think maybe even in a couple episodes of the second season that happens. But God, by the middle of the second season, they are flying with these people. So looking forward to watching some more of these with you. Hope you guys enjoyed us looking back at episode 3. If you haven't done so, you can check out the first couple episodes we did on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you may be getting these podcasts. We want to thank you guys for listening in with us. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com/warp9. Engage!